It is Monday, 20th of August. Welcome to episode 131 of Digital Outbox. Hello, and thanks for joining us once again. On the end of the line is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Bonjour. Monsieur Ian.
Ça va?
Oui, ça va bien. That's the end of my French knowledge, so let's not go any further.
It's the end of mine as well. And what? They're dirty, so I don't really want to talk about them anymore. So, it's Monday. We're doing it on an odd day. We've been really good at keeping Thursdays, but we were late last week, thanks to Olympics. And we're late again.
You know, that's how we roll.
Yeah. One thing I have to mention, my audio quality last week was poor, and it's thanks to Mountain Goat. So Mountain Lion has, and I swore that don't update the main production box, update the other ones and be done with it, and I did it. And it all sounded fine, but there's some odd bits of hiss and static, and every so often it jumps. So you'll hear, my audio last week, When I was playing it back, all of a sudden it would just jump, which made timing a bit of an issue. So, and I'd love to say it's fixed this week. I have no faith.
So you could be listening to this jumbled mess again, but, you know, things like that happen. There's not a lot we can do, especially when we're late and we don't want to record it again. I have an update from last week, which was after all our stories of paranoia and Macs getting wiped and hacked. I am now the proud owner of a Western Digital MyBook Thunderbolt Duo, which gives me 3 terabytes of mirrored drive to back up onto. I'm currently backing everything up. Turned off all out my Find My Macs, and I have what else have I done? Turned on 2-step authentication. So I've kind of followed our own advice.
Loving the dream. Loving the dream.
Yeah. I feel a bit better.
I guess it's like as we said last time, you can be really blasé about it, and then when it hits you, you'd be like, oh crap.
Yeah, and so it does give me that little bit of comfort. However, what didn't give me a bit of comfort is finding out how much a Thunderbolt blooming cable costs. I hope it's solid gold, because it cost me 40 quid.
No, I like all the Mac fanboys that say, yeah, but there's chips inside. It's a cable.
It better be solid gold, I tell you. That's a ridiculous amount of money. However, it does give a lot of fat data transfer, which is nice.
Well, that's good news. Anyway, moving on to our news of the week. One's a Dixon's employee. Mm-hmm. Now, Apple.
You can take
Apple
a dick out of Dixon's.
There's so many with this. Apple don't usually make mistakes, and when they do, they kind of backtrack. I think it was the start of this year. I've got it done as last year, but John Browett was headhunted. He was the guy that was in charge of the Dixon's group, and he went in as head of retail at Apple. And at the time, a lot of people in the UK were like, "Yes, that'll be interesting." And it looks like his first misstep has taken place. So there was a number of stories last week and the week before about Apple reducing numbers in their stores, which seemed an odd thing to do, because when you walk into an Apple store, one thing you're guaranteed of is lots of staff.
Yes, almost personal shopping.
It is. And he sent out a mail last week and said, we messed up. So people that were laying off were actually hiring them again. And seemingly this was all down to him. He wanted to try a new staffing formula because he thought they were a bit fatty.
Yeah, and there were some alien things. I mean, Apple have made their money despite trying to do things properly, I guess. And they tried to lower staff numbers to actually meet profit goals. And that's kind of against the philosophy that Apple are known for, really.
And when they're now, I mean, just as of today, their share price and their market capital is they're the biggest company ever.
Yes, they are the most valuable company in the history of companies.
And to think they were sitting there saying, let's reduce some staff and save some money. I mean, the stores, are one of a number of reasons that helped turn that company around. I mean, everybody was pulling out of retail and they said, no, let's do it.
And I guess we're going to have lots of people now saying, well, this is because Steve's not there anymore. He's not there to control it. But
no,
the fact
rubbish.
Is they make mistakes like this, but they do backtrack. And at least they have backtracked out of this one as well. I say at least. I mean, you can see why they're doing it. You know, I'm sure efficiency-wise, you can get rid of staff, but you should really work out how to do it before you actually make the cuts and then figure out you can't do it, I guess.
The whole Steve thing's just junk anyway. When you think about the mistakes that they had when he was there. So this whole thing, oh my God, Steve, you know, you can tell Steve Jobs isn't there, sod off.
Yeah, I stand by what I said. I think in 2-3 years' time, when they need to adapt, I think that's when they might start struggling because they won't have necessarily the same skills in adapting. But that's to be seen, and I don't think we're seeing that yet.
No, and an interesting thing is Samsung won't pose my problem because they'll just copy whatever they adapt to. So
that's true. Everyone would just be as bad as each other.
Yeah. So anyway, I ended up post with idiot. Moving on, Amazon. Amazon, we've mentioned Yodel and home delivery networks and all sorts of things, but Amazon are going to deliver your parcels to UK corner shops.
Yeah, so they're going to continue their, I guess, march into the retail space. I guess because of all the concerns about delivery and the fact that people get home from work and they find a note on their doorstep saying, oh, I've tried to deliver a parcel, you weren't in. Well, no, because I was at work. So now they're going to offer a way of actually dropping parcels off at select stores. So, you know, you can ask for it to be delivered somewhere, you know, you can pick it up that day, which, of course, seems like a really good idea and is a step along for online businesses. But retail businesses are on the high street are getting pretty scared because this is now the online actually really encroaching onto their space, and they're kind of realizing they're not offering anything better basically.
No I as soon as I read this I thought fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I don't know whether I go on about these kind of things all the time, but I see the high street in the future as being just outlet stores for online purchases, you know, and having pods inside the stores where, you know, you just, they're not even branded. So it's the websites that are branded and then they'll have generic outlets, that places, warehouses in the high street. And I think that's where I see it going. High streets will turn into bars and warehouse outlets.
Yep. And you can check the website right now, not Amazon, but collectplus.co.uk. You can fire that up, zap in your postcode and see which stores locally support it. And it's available now as an option. And it's not just Amazon that are using this service. There's quite a number of brands are starting to use it.
Is it available for everyone at the moment then? Is it just in certain regions?
I think Amazon were trialing it in a small region, but after the article went live, they basically said it's now available as a delivery option.
Yeah, anyway, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, it seems silly just the people having to drive out to your house when you know you're not going to be there to pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if I look around my area, there is about maybe 10 or 12, you know, on my drive home from work that I could pop in and pick up a parcel, which isn't too bad.
Yeah. Credit where credit's due. Yodel did deliver my Western Digital Drive ahead of time, and it's even still in one piece and working. So there you go. Much praise indeed.
That is pretty high praise. I mean, just the fact they delivered.
It was either that or it's just really good packaging and just pot luck.
Well, the best thing is that's exceeded all expectation. Our friends Twitter, they've announced their API changes.
Yeah, are they our friends or kind of the people we used to like and kind of going off them a bit?
Well, I don't know. So this has been talked about for probably about, 9 months to a year, that they've been making, you know, overtones about, yes, we're going to change and watch out third-party devs. So this is version 1.1 of their API. So first of all, they're saying you need to be properly authenticated, so using OAuth when you make API requests, which seems fair enough. You know, that's the standard that most of these companies are moving to. The second change is they are changing how many authenticated requests that applications can make. via the API. So at the moment it was 350 calls per hour, but they're limiting it to 60. But in doing that, they're actually making it more granular how many calls you can make in different things. So certainly some of the third party developers have said you actually get more calls, not less, even though the figures look as if you're getting a lot less.
Well, it depends whether you're accessing. If your application just accesses one endpoint, then you're obviously getting quite a lot less access.
If it was accessing
multiple endpoints, and their endpoints sort of, you know, they have different functions at each endpoint that you can interrogate.
Searches or direct messages or whatever.
Correct. Yep.
So that doesn't seem too bad either. The third one was. I guess where it's starting to get a bit more interesting, it's to do with the consistent experience. So previously they had guidelines to how a tweet should be displayed, but now they're actually saying it's not so much guidelines, but these are requirements.
Yeah, so that will be interesting. A bit more insistent. Well, it's not even insistent anymore. It's you have to do it now, basically.
Yep. So I think that means adverts will be coming to all the clients, all the kind of things that the official clients are doing that you maybe don't like will have to do as well. But they made some strange claims in it as well. It was things like you can't link out to third-party social networks. And straight away people were like, well, does that mean I can't do my sharing to Instapaper that I currently do?
Yeah, and it positions them in this weird place where they're, it feels like they're kind of bullying people now away from... you know, they're almost putting in stone what's been malleable so far, and that's one of the attractions of Twitter, is the fact that it's been this ball of clay that they could, you know, make any shape they wanted. But now they're kind of, I don't know, I can't believe I'm going down this line. They're putting it in the kiln.
Oh, you see, we don't have video tonight, but I can see your embarrassment from here.
It was terrible, but never mind. There you go. And we've said all along that, you know, will this kill what Twitter was, which was this, you know, they're saying everyone has to have retweets now. Well, it was only 2 seconds ago that the official client was the only one that didn't have retweets and couldn't figure out how to do it.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to be as dramatic a change as people are saying.
It's not. It's a change of attitude, though, isn't it? And it is an attitude now where I guess they're thinking, we've got this massive infrastructure. We're plowing money into this left, right and centre. We've got to figure out a way to stop the hemorrhage of money and try and work out how to make some money. And that's not going to be comfortable, but the way they're going to do it is by making sure people aren't stealing the data that's collected from them, using it in sensible ways, and that they've got the control over it, basically.
One thing that did seem a bit of a killer was this user cap. So basically they were saying that if you're a third-party application, the most users you can have is 2 times 100,000 users, unless you get special permission from Twitter. So the fear was that if you're a developer and you think, I've got a great idea for a new Twitter app, by pricing it at a certain price, you know pretty much already how much you're going to make out of that, because Twitter could turn around and say, we're not letting you go anymore. That's it.
I mean, that's bullcrap for me. I mean, how can you put that? How can you say that you're only ever allowed 100,000 users? I mean, it just, I don't know where do they come up with that figure? And, you know, I know Tweetbot aren't worried. They've kind of released statements saying, you know, we've got 2 times our current user base is a great deal and will last for at least another 2 to 4 years, something like that. But it's still, I don't understand why they need to. Tweetbot is the best thing about Twitter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how many people, and I know some people don't like it and maybe don't like the looks, but for me, functionality and just how it works across all the platforms for me is just gold.
It's just ultra reliable, and it's just an easy thing to pick up. You know, start from where you left off and off you go. The main Twitter client has got nothing on it.
No, absolutely. 2 different views. Marco Arment, who is the guy behind Instapaper, he was very negative on it. Basically, I should have said I wouldn't build a business on Twitter. I don't think I'll even build any non-trivial features on it anymore. He had some issues about he has things where you can, you know, collect links and show them in Instapaper, and he reckons it's more than 100k, and, you know, from a user cap point of view, and he just doesn't know how he can support that going forward. So he's got some issues right now. And as you've already said, Paul Haddad, who is the Tweetbot developer, he was a lot more positive. Basically, don't panic. The authentication changes makes no difference. User cap, he's not thrilled about the ideas, but it's not going to affect Tweetbot, at least in the short term anyway. And display requirements, he says, we'll work with Twitter as we have been. So over the next 6 months, we'll make sure we comply as much as possible.
Yeah, I kind of worry that they'd have to take something away. I mean, things like
I hope Tweetbot's
exactly. got Translate, which I hope they wouldn't ever take away and things like that. So we will see. People said the same thing about Facebook, as far as don't ever use Facebook as your, you know, as an integral part of your business, because they keep, you know, changing and screwing people over. So, and that hasn't stopped. So I'm pretty sure people will still use Twitter as they already have done.
I've seen a couple of posts, particularly on app.net, of people saying that's me. That's it, I'm ditching Twitter. I don't want adverts. I've got an alternative. There's actually quite a lot of conversation on app.net, but it is all developer talk, and there's very little just normal, you know, I'm scratching my balls type talk. You know, it's just all very
and
focused.
And that's fine
on
if you want
clients.
That kind of thing. I don't see Twitter suffering at all on a user basis, because again, the user doesn't care. That they just want to get Twitter. They'll get it through one app or another, or even through the official one. They don't really care. They're embedded now.
What is amazing in app.net is the amount of developers and the amount of development taking place, the amount of clients that are all competing right now.
But that's all. That's
fantastic.
That's all it is.
It's fantastic to watch.
It's going to be 800,000 apps with 800,000 developer users.
And can I me just watching?
Yeah, just you having a look.
And I mean, a couple of things. I mean, the guys behind Twitter have all kind of moved on now. You know, so Ev Williams and Biz Stone, and that's what a couple of stories we're coming on to next. And they've moved on to other things. And you do wonder if the kind of heart of what drove that company forward has gone. And it is, as you're saying, it is about the infrastructure must be phenomenal from a cost perspective. And quite rightly, they're focusing on how do we turn this into a business.
And I have to say, I mean, that's one, you know, again, from like Steve Jobs' autobiography, there's a passage in there that says the hard bit is not creating these new ideas, it's actually turning them into businesses. And it seems like these other two, they do just sort of, you know, waltz off and, oh, we'll do this and then we'll do that and we'll do that. And the hard bit, they kind of leave behind.
Yeah, no, definitely. So they started off Blogger, sold it to Google, and then moved on, created Twitter, and didn't sell on, but obviously they got a whole lot of VC investment and they're now off doing a couple other things. First one of which is Medium. I don't know if you know much about Medium.
I only had a look at it just before we recorded, actually, so not come across it until then.
It's a kind of cross between a lightweight blogging tool and Pinterest. So you kind of blog on a collection and you add your content to other collections, and it's a very kind of Pinteresty front end. And seemingly it's invite only. So again, it's kind of hard to get an idea of what the tool, you know, works like, but it's interesting. They seem to be almost like starting to throw these companies up and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, the idea I got from it was that there'd be these collections which someone starts off, and then you get invited to actually contribute to those collections, and you can like one of the collections could be the strangest thing I've ever done, and then someone can post up a story. And then the more that people read that story and actually click that they liked it or found it useful, the higher up the list or the kind of scrapbook the actual article will appear. So I thought there was at least a bit of an idea there, and whether it actually ends up being good, I don't know. But it's collaborative web content, really.
Yep. And similarly, the way the front end tool works is quite interesting, and there's not much like toolbars, etc. But if you highlight text, a little floaty bar appears above it to say maybe you want to, you know, bold this. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. Reminding me of almost like a kind of iOS-y interface, that touch interface. And I guess if Medium doesn't work, then maybe Branch will. So Branch is also, it's been in kind of like a really kind of private beta, with every so often somebody on Twitter would post out a link to a Branch. And basically Branch is, you pick a topic, you write a short comment, not 140 characters, but not much more. And then you handpick others to add to that conversation. So it's not an open conversation. It's almost you curating who you want to be involved in that kind of debate.
I wasn't sure whether there was any form of moderation here, or whether you actually had to physically ask someone to come and join in the conversation, or whether the original instigator could just moderate what came in or not. I wasn't sure.
From what I understand, the original topic owner owns a topic, invites people in, but other people can invite, and you can be asked to contribute. and the owner can say yes or no. So a couple of interesting products. They don't look, you know, quite sticky enough for me. I just can't see them getting enough traction.
Yeah, I get, and the idea is to you know, that they are, you can contribute by any media, so you could email it, you could, it can have, you know, articles you found online and all those kind of things. And you're right, and you can embed the actual main conversation string into all manner of different places. Again, I can see a spark of an idea. I'm not so sure this one, about this one though.
No.
No.
No. I just don't see it. It's just not as easy to use, and I think for a certain audience it's probably very useful. But not really for me.
No, it doesn't excite.
No. Not like internet trolls excite.
They excite constantly.
So a question for you, Chris. Is the UK heavy-handed with internet trolls?
I think over the last few months that we have been continuously telling our listeners that we feel that sometimes people are being made examples of in harsh ways, especially seeing as we're entering this brand new world where people don't really know where the boundaries are, and where there weren't any boundaries, they are now kind of quite strict ones. So yes, I think we are quite heavy-handed. Not always without warrant, though.
No, so the Oxford Internet Institute has been monitoring what happens in other countries and comparing it to the UK, and says the UK is leading the way in cracking down on the type of online abuse that we've seen to people like Tom Daley, and there's been a few others where it's been quite noticeable, where they've just got a torrent of abuse or abuse from one particular person. The chief police officers, they have disagreed. People have a right to publish their views, but when these views become indecent, threatening or offensive, then the individuals they affect also have the right to report them. The police will assist with any prosecution.
Especially if they're famous and it gets a lot of publicity.
Precisely. Or maybe quite a few,
only if.
there's been quite a few cases where, you know, when it's somebody famous, they can make a complaint and it happens instantly.
Yes.
But if, you know, if you're a nobody and you make a complaint, it's like, who are you?
Yeah. So there's and definitely a little bit of something going on, I guess, but also that's because if it is someone famous, then there's a lot more exposure on Twitter, whereas if it's not, it's just, you know, depends how you rate how offensive it is, really. Because yes. if your offensive comment gets read by, 2 million people, it's, I guess, by some standard, more offensive than if it's only read by 10. Maybe.
Yes. And if you look at some of the Frankie Boyle tweets,
yeah, I think every one of them away with his life.
Is offensive. So
he is pretty offensive.
And funny. Anyway.
Sometimes funny.
Yeah, that's true. Our favourite topic from the last 4 weeks, the Olympics.
Woohoo!
Slightly dodgy closing ceremony, but we won't go there.
I think the best thing about the closing ceremony was it let everyone on Twitter get back to their moaning ways. We all had a good old moan and a ramble, but it was still it was generic closing ceremony stuff. Nothing too special, nothing horrendously bad. I say that there were some pretty bad moments, but it still ended our Olympics.
I looked at it as a reset button for Britain. You've had your 2 week bubble.
Welcome back
to work tomorrow.
There was no way the closing ceremony was ever going to be anything other than not as good as the opening ceremony, so, or the Olympics. So there we go. It's a shame, really.
The BBC did a great job, not just on TV, but online. The amount of information and the amount of streams available was pretty phenomenal. I don't know if you want to take us through some of these stats that they've released, because it's mental.
The one that sticks in my mind, and there are lots here, so I might pick and choose a couple of others, but
I hope
their
you do.
their peak online usage was when Bradley Wiggins won his gold medal, and that was at the kind of same time that there were a few other medals going on as well at the same time. But they managed to pump out 700 gigabits per second. Even Tam can't make that usage level. and over the whole, on the busiest day, they chubbed out 2.8 petabytes of data. I don't understand how they did it. I just don't know, because it. I don't know. Did you watch online?
I did.
I had perfect streams anywhere I looked.
And that's what I was going to say. Never did I fire up iPlayer on the iPad or one of the sports apps or on the Tinternet, you know, on any of the PCs or Macs that I used, and it stuttered. It was just like, it worked.
And I'm ashamed to say that at one point I was watching on TV, I had the iPad on another stream, and I had the MacBook Pro on another stream, and that all you know, the two streams were just perfect. Just bonkers. I just don't know how they did it. But they also had over half of the UK watched it online at some point or other.
Yeah, so they've called this the kind of first truly digital Olympics. So it's, and I think that's true.
37 million UK online browsers.
Yeah.
At some point or other watching it. And just utterly smashed the previous record, which was 7.4 million global and 5.7 in the UK. So with 37 million just in the UK, that's and 55 million across the globe. That's just unbelievable. And seriously, their IT guys need a big clap and a pat on the back, because it just worked. It just worked.
Yeah, and it was what was interesting as well. It wasn't just on a computer. It was how things like tablets, you know, so they were kind of quiet during the day, but certainly well into the evening, you know, they were the most popular device compared to computers.
Yep. So you can see people took their iPad to, you know, upstairs or whatever, and just watch a bit more of the Olympics while upstairs or on the bog.
so good job. And no, carry on.
I was just going to say they had nearly 2 million people downloaded their app across all the platforms, which gave all the data and results and things. Most people just looking at the medals table and glowing with pride.
I did notice that the day after the Olympics finished, an iPlayer update came out to support Retina graphics and Retina screens.
after.
And I did think, good timing, BBC.
Yeah, I think so. Now, and this is, I don't know where I read this. I think it was on Twitter somewhere, that the total cost for each person of the Olympics was about £4.50 for all of that coverage across all the radio. They even, you know, they had an extra digital Five Live station constantly broadcasting. All those, the 24 high def channels across Freeview and Sky, and 24 standard definition.
And don't forget Gary Lineker, because where would we be without his insight?
I tell you what, that he shouldn't be let outside the football arena, as far as I'm concerned. I just
no him and Mark Lawrence, you know, just commenting. I mean, he has just turned into like, you're just commentating football, and it would just be like, oh, doesn't matter what it is, it's always a negative. Or and if it's a great goal, oh, what a great goal! But what was the goalkeeper doing?
Yeah,
you know, it's oh, I just honestly.
So yeah, I'm afraid he wasn't a star of the show for me. But there you go.
And that Jordy bloke off the one show as well. Lock him up.
Hmm.
Matt Baker, that's his name. Everybody else is pretty spot on.
He only did a little bit. He wasn't there that much, was he? So it's fine.
Moving on, Jeremy Hunt, probably following on from this great Digital Olympics, he has pledged that the UK will have the fastest broadband network in Europe by 2015.
Will we now? Will we indeed? I think he's got a bit too much of the old Olympics glow in him. he's not come back to reality yet.
And I really had to pause with the old Jeremy Hunt.
Everyone has to pause. It makes you tense every time you hear his name. So he's kind of saying that their target to create the best super fast broadband in Europe by the end of the parliament, and that he reckons he's on target, if not already meeting it, which is
garbage.
It's a joke, really.
Even when he made the comment, because when you read it out, I am today announcing an ambition to be not just the best overall, but specifically the fastest broadband of any major European country. Indeed, we may already be there. Yeah.
but that does turn out to be a bit rubbish, really. So we've seen actually a 20% increase in speed since last year, I believe. However, that's very much centered on the cities are the ones that are bringing that speed up. And if you're in a rural community, they haven't seen very much increase at all. So it's, even though we've seen a 20% increase, really in real terms, that's just been giving the people that already had fast broadband even faster broadband rather than spreading it wider.
Yep, and we're currently, according to a Kami or a Kami, I'll never be able to pronounce that, so it doesn't really matter, but we're currently 15th from the on average measured connection speed across Europe and 21st in the world. So not in the best places right now. And I don't see how the money that they're talking about investing is going to take us to number one.
But the thing is, if they want to do it, I'm sure they can, and say they're going to have to get these fibre connections out there somehow. And maybe by saying these silly statements, they're going to back themselves into a corner where they have to do something about it.
Absolutely. Netflix, so a company totally taking advantage of our digital infrastructure, they've reached 1 million subscribers in the UK. Hurrah.
In only, what is it? So since January, I think they launched, didn't they?
Yep, 7 months. So that's pretty good going. Well done, Netflix.
Well, and hopefully the competition with them and Love Film and all the kind of Sky's new offerings, maybe they will, all this competition will mean that actually we do get content on them. Because I haven't actually looked recently at the content across Amazon or, Love Film or Netflix. When I first looked, they weren't particularly compelling.
No, but I thought Netflix was really quite poor. I just thought the content wasn't there. But interestingly, their chief executive, Reed Hastings, has said today that they'd really want to try and get the premium Hollywood movie rights away from BSkyB, saying they'll be really aggressive in their bidding.
So I guess, yeah, stack them high, sell them cheap, maybe, to try and get them. If you've got 1 million people that want to watch it, then great. Good then.
Yep. A bit of a shock, this one. On live. Basically folded and restarted again, all within one day.
Oh, right. Do we know why they folded?
So On Live, if you don't know who On Live are, they're the kind of streaming games company. They've been going for maybe 4 or 5 years, but it's only over the last couple of years they've actually a product to sell. They did boast of 2.5 million members, but seemingly that 2.5 million members broke down to roughly 1,800 concurrent users, which isn't very much.
No.
And also the amount of hardware and again bandwidth that they chew up is phenomenal. So basically there was a rumor started on Friday that they were going to pop, and their chief executive pulled all the staff into a room and says, "Yep, that's us. We're done. But we have sold our assets and our IP onto another company, and they are going to take most of you on, but the most is less than 50%." And right. because the shares have popped on it, a lot of the, or almost all the old employees had shares in the company, they are now worthless.
So I bet everyone felt very valued. And I thought BT had a holding in this, or were they just a partner in the UK?
No, BT seemingly had a holding, but they have not come out with any statement. Who else had one as well? It was one of the mobile phone companies. Had a holding, and I'm just Googling right now to see if I can find out who it was. But they lost $40 million. HTC had to write off $40 million.
And so a fold and a restart on that is that, you know, that's going to leave a lot of bitter taste in a lot of people. Not going to make you want to invest in the new company, really, is it?
No, and I don't know. I mean, a lot of big companies had obviously put in... a lot of time and effort. And the interesting thing is that their chief executive, Steve Perlman, seemingly he's got form of doing this, of folding a company and starting it up on the same day and still being employed there, but obviously none of the employees have any of the benefits. And seemingly a question was asked about the IP and where that sits. And he said, well, the old company, you know, didn't really own it either, but seemingly it was a subsidiary that he owned that seemed to own the IP that's been sold on. So it sounds really quite murky.
It sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it?
And they're being very bold, saying there's going to be no loss of service. If you're a current, you know, subscriber, keep on using it. It's not going to disappear, and we've got a new aggressive rollout of features. But I just can't see it. I can't see it going on. I really can't.
No, it seems maybe like it's the beginning end of On Live, but we have seen similar clones appearing and big. I think PlayStation were talking with a company that was doing a very similar thing, and they might have more have a chance of maybe surviving. I mean, On Live got further than we ever imagined they would. So, and maybe they've got the gumption to carry on.
Yeah, Sony bought a company called Gaikai, which was from David Perry, and it was for about $300 million. And I think one of the issues was On Live was always rumored to be valued at, you know, $1.5 billion to $2 billion. And I think the valuations have come down in a lot of these streaming companies.
To more realistic levels, no doubt.
Yep. Yep. A couple of game stories to finish off. Call of Duty, Black Ops 2. So I guess that is the big game of the year, because it's always the biggest selling game now. And they've actually done, they seem to be doing something quite different, you know, to the multiplayer game. They're actually adding in an esports element. And broadcasting tools, so you can sit and watch other multiplayer games as a spectator.
Okay, that's an interesting angle. I mean, we used to see that in sort of Team Fortress on the PC days. You could go and spectate on things.
Yep. So they've thought about, you know, cheating and somebody seeing somebody else's stream and feeding that back. So the streams are all delayed by a few seconds to avoid that. But it's an interesting change. And that they're also finally trying to make it a bit more fairer. I guess we always loved Halo, and I've always thought Halo is a bit fairer when you match make with other people. It seems to be of a more realistic level to what you are, and finally that's coming to Call of Duty as well. So they're trying to put you in leagues with like performing opponents.
So hopefully you won't get completely demoralized by getting shot every 2 milliseconds.
I always find it very off-putting that unless you got in day one in Call of Duty, that you were stuffed, you're always behind and you always lost.
Well, it always felt like that. Maybe there was a bit of psychology there.
Maybe it was just rubbish.
We're just bad at gaming.
Oh, I don't know. Certain games I think I can hold my own, he says, stroking his ego. And then thinking, yeah, you're probably right.
We used to be good in the days where we only played with our little circle of friends. We didn't play MotoGP, with the wider world.
MotoGP, when there was only 10,000 people, we were in the top 10,000.
Yeah, exactly.
hold on. I'm going to defend myself. I can look at my top 300 score in Geometry Wars.
No, but yeah, you did get a bit obsessed by that game. So that's pretty. That is pretty special.
Have it. And that's in bloody iOS with dodgy thumb things.
Yeah, I don't know how nonsense. You persevered with that. Did my head in.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Final little one, SimCity. This is my shout out to Mac people. Yeah, we've got a game coming out. SimCity's coming to Mac at the same time as the PC. And SimCity, the new version, looks awesome.
I haven't sort of seen anything about this. I might go and dig it out after this, after we've finished talking, because I used to like SimCity quite a lot.
Yeah, the level of detail in it looks immense.
Yeah, absolutely, it's one of those immense games, though, that could get frighteningly detailed, and that worries me a little bit.
Yes. That's the news, and that's our show, because we're no picks unless Chris has got one in his head.
None in my head. Nothing in my head. It's just empty. It echoes.
Echoes. Echoes.
Ba-ba.
I think I'll cut all that bit out.
Okay.
If you'd like to find out more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com. We'd love to get an email from you, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. This is the first time we've used Skype in ages. It just feels odd.
Yeah.
And my blog is iandd.net, and I'm on Twitter as Sweeper, and app.net is iandick. I'll keep it going for another week, but I'll probably never mention that again. Chris, where can we find you?
I think you should keep mentioning it for the year that you've got your subscription for. You know, you might get someone. If anyone, actually, we should set a challenge. We should find a little prize for anyone who connects and lets us know that they've connected to you via app.net. Not going to happen. We could probably offer the best prize ever. Anyway, I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK.
I think you should donate your car.
I haven't even got it yet. Maybe when I'm exactly. So sick of not being able to put it together. Yeah.
And on that note, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again soon. Goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Why did I say goodbye now?
I don't know.
Gayest thing ever.
It's good though. It adds your own
goodbye now
touch. Because I would never do that.
Yeah, I'm sweating like a pig because I had to shut the door.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye now.
Ta-ra. See you later. Yeah, I'm going to stop now.